But on any given night, I mean, on any given night here, Alabama can get knocked off, because as we said, it's a level playing field this year. I still like my pick in U of H, who's the winner that I picked in all three of my brackets. Yeah. I picked U of H. And the reason why I picked U of H, I think they're a better team than they were last year. They got guys that came back, give them more experience. And now here we are again, your Sweet 16, you're right there and it's in your grasp when you've been this close for the past 3 years. So it's kind of like, okay, it's time for y'all to take that step and just and win it all. Please, yeah, don't pick a Hakeem Olajuwon.
Oh, no, not a kid. But, I mean, like I said, it's going to get really, really, really good. Like, this the tournament is going to be good for the rest. Of course, once we get to the Elite Eight and in the Final Four, we already know what it's going to be. But it's – and, of course, I don't know – I'm sure you saw it, being us wonderful folks being from Houston, that once they shut the rodeo down, they immediately started flipping that thing, getting it ready for the Final Four. So
– yep. Yep.
So you know what's coming. So
we might have to get some tickets just to be live on location inside.
Hey, you know, anything is possible these days.
I'm trying to tell you.
Hey, we did that. So like I said, so we got past the madness. So from the madness, let's make our transition over to good old Hollywood. Let's talk about WrestleMania, man. Let's get this conversation going, because
Hollywood.
You and I have been watching this. We've been watching these storylines build for months, arguably years at this point.
Yeah, the bloodline story has been years.
Yeah. The bloodline story is one of the best things we've seen since the very beginnings of, like, the Ruthless Aggression era, as far as, like, the stories go. Like, to see this come together the way it did, starting with just Roman and Jay, and then just transition to the entire bloodline, bringing in their brother Solo Sikoa on top of all those things, like watching the internal struggle and turmoil, the ups and downs. Like, this by itself was like an Oscar winning performance by the entire bloodline.
Yep.
Because there was a point in time, remember when the Brock and Roman story went down and Paul Heyman was kind of in between on both and didn't really know what he wanted to do. But then all of a sudden, when rubber met the road, he threw that belt in there so that Roman could knock that boy out one time and then kept it pushing. Insert Cody Rhodes, who, when the bloodline story started, wasn't even in WWE. He was over there
from home
doing as one of the founding pillars with Chris Jericho and Kenny Omega and the Young Bucks and all those guys, doing his thing over there. Now he's back. So, of course, there's been rumors back and forth talking about they wanted to talk about splitting the belts. I actually read a story today that Triple H wants to do away completely with the Universal title and is talking about bringing back Big Gold.
Oh, good old Big Gold. Okay, so would that bring back heavyweight and WWE championship, or just one?
It would essentially, I guess, de-unify would be the right word. It would essentially de-unify them, but then there's been a couple of different back and forth. Some stories have said, hey, we're going to keep them unified. Some say that we're going to de-unify them and go back, because a lot of people know this. Some people know this, some people don't, but USA was upset because they don't have a permanent champion. Like, they don't have a champion on Monday because the title's on one person and he doesn't make as many appearances on Raw as he does on SmackDown. Of course, Fox is happy. They got both the belts and the guy has the belt. So, of course, they're happy about it. But so there's some contract reasonings why it also has to happen. They're trying to figure out the right way to do it. My understanding initially, too, was when this first came about, the original plan was never to unify the titles. It just kind of happened that way. So basically, when Triple H finally came into the fold and took over, he kind of inherited a mess. And this is him trying to fix this. But on top of it, they also ended up with one of the best storylines in the last 15 years.
Well, I think part of this, too, is maybe you or somebody else, I don't know. Maybe you might not feel like this. I'm not sure, but I don't see a reason to de-unify it. I just don't. I don't understand the point of de-unifying it, because I don't think the roster is as deep as it once was to have a brand split. So, granted, now what they have been doing recently to keep both shows interesting, obviously, is crossing over the big stars that are going to fight at pay-per-views. and putting them on both shows just to keep it interesting, to make sure you watch both shows, which is a very, very good concept. So I propose that you have one WWE championship or heavyweight, whatever you want to call it, the big gold, and keep the Intercontinental Championship on one show and keep the United States Championship on another.
The problem you run into is you have too many overlapping stories when it comes to who's going to be up for the main event, who's up for the big belt. It makes more sense to continue having the two belts. It's just, and you're right, the rosters are not as deep, but there are enough storylines to justify having two separate champions. Because on top of that, what we have to look at too is the story continues to, I think every day that I've been online, this story comes up, is that Roman Reigns is going to take an extended break after WrestleMania, and he's going to be out until SummerSlam, which means we've got to have somebody defending the championship, or at least somebody around, somebody relevant. So does that mean he's going to drop the belt at Mania? Not necessarily. But is it safe to say that he may drop one somehow, some way? Yeah, it's 100% in the cards. But I don't really know.
Right?
From my understanding, the way the card is set up, he's still fighting for both.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's the, they're calling it the Undisputed WWE Universal Championship. So yeah, he's fighting for.
Okay. Really, I get it. Okay.
Yeah, I got it. So let's go down the match card. Let's kind of take a look at some of this, because some of these stories have been building up pretty dope. So of course, right off top, they're going to talk about Seth Rollins versus Logan Paul, a story that's been slow building, really, because it kind of came out of nowhere, because it started with Logan Paul and The Miz. We saw that was not a bad little, like, they started off being a little bit of a tag team, and then The Miz turned on him, and now Logan Paul acts like The Miz doesn't even exist, to a point where now The Miz is hosting WrestleMania, not even wrestling. That's crazy to me.
That's what's happening.
But now you insert Seth Rollins, who's been doing all these interviews saying, oh, Logan Paul needs to stay where he's at on social media. He's not really a wrestler. Like, you know, he's said a lot of things about him and about CM Punk. He's like, look, I don't really like this guy. Like, he's cool for social media, but I don't really care for him as a wrestler, which caused him to essentially the whole Montez Ford falling out in the Elimination Chamber and Logan Paul coming in and screwing Seth Rollins out of winning it. Henceforth, now building, and now for the second time now, Logan Paul is quote unquote knocked Seth Rollins out with a punch. So Seth is doing what the company's telling him to do. He's been building these stars up. So at some point, Seth Rollins has got to get back, one, in the main event picture, and two, he's got to get back to doing what we're accustomed to him doing.
Damn it, he got to get back to winning at WrestleMania.
Yeah. Because, I mean, we know he's been a part of literally the greatest counter in the history of WrestleMania with that pop-up RKO.
But he was on the receiving end.
That's what I'm saying. That's what I said. He was a part of the greatest counter, because we were all together when that happened. Of course, we all about fell out our damn couches when that
happened. Yeah, that was crazy.
Because I ain't never seen nothing like that. And shout out to Randy Orton's knee for holding up in that situation, too. Because that's a 220-pound man. You just kind of let springboard off your knee real quick.
Yeah.
But it worked. You know, so, of course, we talked about it. You've got Roman Reigns versus Cody Rhodes. We'll see how that story goes. I do want to talk about this one, though. This Charlotte Flair versus Rhea Ripley.
Yeah, I'm very interested in this one.
I love this match because we've seen it before. And when we saw it, it was like the first time we saw this match, which was at WrestleMania, was the rookie versus the vet. And Charlotte kind of took it to Rhea. Rhea wasn't ready yet. She was a star on NXT. She was being built, but she was not quite ready for the main stage. Insert X number of years later, she's had time to really come into her own. She wins the Women's Royal Rumble, and she's like, I want Charlotte Flair because I want that match back that I lost back at, you know, that I lost back at Mania a couple years ago.
Correct.
This version of Rhea Ripley is scary. She's arguably pound for pound the strongest woman in the women's division, maybe between her and Raquel Gonzalez and Bianca, because those are like kind of all mixed in there. But she's dangerous. Like, she's flat out dangerous. And we know what Charlotte Flair is. We've seen this. She's already like a 13-time champion or whatever the hell how that's panned out. But it's a box office championship match, and it's going to be the main event for night one of WrestleMania. So not a bad way to close out night one.
I mean, if I was writing this story, if I was writing this story, Charlotte Flair is going to win again. If I was writing the story, Charlotte Flair is going to win again, because I don't want to sound like a old grumpy guy when I say this. I do like the build-up that they've given Rhea Ripley and the Judgment Day. But I feel like it would be a surprise if Charlotte Flair actually wins this match, because they built it up so much for Rhea to finally win. I think they should let Rhea get real close at winning and let Charlotte Flair remain champion for right now, because if she loses this belt, she's basically out the title picture again. And Charlotte Flair has a tendency to become irrelevant and then go complain about how she has no story in the championship picture over and over again. And that's why she has 13 damn championships at this point. Stop.
Yeah, and
if she loses, do not give her another title fight in the next two pay-per-views, please.
But that's exactly what would happen to give her. They're gonna have her break her dad's record. That's what's going to happen.
Well, she has to lose Cena.
She does, exactly, which is why I said what I'm saying now is that Rhea Ripley is most likely going to win this match.
Yeah.
Simply because they put in too much work to build her, to simply let her essentially fall from grace now. Because this build with the Judgment Day becoming everything that they didn't expect. I don't even know if they expected it to blow up the way that it blew up, but it makes sense to put the belt on her. She's gotten better on the microphone. She's obviously the product in the ring is considerably better than what it once was, but this is going to be a very hard-hitting match. Like, it really is. Like, this is going to be a very action-packed match. And I love the direction that the women's division has gone since us being kids, watching the bra and panties matches and all the shit that we used to watch as kids during the Attitude Era, to seeing what
I forgot
now.
About the bra and panty matches. That was crazy.
So, but you have to think about it. So think about when the matches that we have now come down to, ironically, the two women that are also in this pay-per-view between Trish Stratus and Lita are the reason why, one of the main reasons why we have what we have now in the women's division, because Lita was already a trained wrestler. Lita trained in Mexico and all this other stuff to become what she was. And Trish Stratus was figuring it out as she went. But then all of a sudden Lita joins the Hardy Boys, becomes Team Extreme.
And then
you've got Trish Stratus, who's with Test and Prince Albert at the time.
Yeah.
So, you know, and now you've got them in these six person tag matches, and you're seeing them do what things like Rhea Ripley has been doing now. You know, so they laid the groundwork, because remember, after that, all of a sudden you had the Roxanne's come in, you had Jazz come into the fold. You started seeing these more polished, prominent, more wrestlers come in now, female wrestlers that really blew up and helped that division blossom. And then you insert the women's revolution, the four horsewomen from NXT, you know, your Sasha Banks, your Bayley, your Charlotte's, you know, insert Ronda Rousey coming into the fold, and look at what we have now because of what happened way back then.
Amazing, amazing. Cast of female wrestlers right now, probably the best there's ever been. Not even probably, it is the best.
Without question. And I've said this and I'll say it again, like NXT has one of the best all-around women's rosters out there amongst all of your pro red. Like they just have a great balance of powerhouses, cruiserweight styles, very extremely athletic. Like they've got a great mixture of all. The main roster's getting there. It's getting better. They'll be right after, you know, there's already been talks of big plans after WrestleMania, so there's going to be quite a few major call-ups, which we'll discuss that at a later point.
This is good, because, you know, NXT is Triple H's brainchild. That's his baby right there.
Triple H and Shawn Michaels.
Triple H and Shawn Michaels. They rocked the shit out of NXT while they were there. And you see a lot more people now getting called up to the main roster from NXT, which is good, because Vince seemed like he was limiting those guys, because he was so stuck in his ways about keeping who's already generating money, keeping them there instead of giving out big pushes to people from NXT. And NXT is a developmental brand, and if you're not moving people up and calling them up frequently to see how they do, how do you know what you have?
You don't. This is why I love what Triple H is doing. I mean, it's unfortunate for like a guy like Johnny Gargano right now, that's kind of getting like up and down. Now he's going to wrestle at Stand and Deliver, which is NXT's version of WrestleMania now. But he's got a really big match, because he's got to finish up some unfinished business with Grayson Waller. Me and Joseph was talking about NXT earlier today. All right, let's pivot to the other women's championship match. You got Bianca Belair versus Asuka. So you have two contrasting styles. You got a powerhouse versus a submission monster. You have a technician versus a powerhouse.
I don't know, man. This is like the one where I just don't know what the plans are for either. Like I have the slightest idea what the plans are for either. We all know how great of a technical wrestler Asuka is.
And not to mention a lethal striker. The guy she done added Tajiri's poison mist to her repertoire.
I love.
You don't know, and Bianca's arguably been one of the strongest champions overall, just in general, that we've had in a while. Good on the microphone, been putting out solid matches, you know, fought off everybody that's, you know, stepped up. So it's like, can you justify taking the belt off of her? Because if you do, now what?
I don't know if you can. I don't know if you can justify taking the belt off her. And I get it. You know, last year she started her reign last year at WrestleMania Sasha Banks.
She beat Becky.
Becky, my bad, because Becky.
Remember, Bianca was the champion. Becky beat her in that real quick match at SummerSlam, which threw us all off. And then she had to fight her way back to get the belt back.
And so she's right.
Had it ever since. So, you know, so they've done this massive buildup. Mind you, Becky Lynch is back.
Yeah.
A lot of your main staples on the female roster are back, and still Bianca is still your champion. Becky's back. Charlotte's back. Ronda Rousey's there somewhere. You know, Shayna Baszler's there. Like, you know, your main staples are there, and she's still at the top.
Her star power, bro. Bianca's star power is really something else, because it kind of rivals Becky at her peak as the man.
Yeah,
and it's something crazy to watch. And the same way how they had Becky running with the title for a long time, you gotta find somebody that can match her star. I don't think Asuka has the fan base in America anyway, I should say.
It's not even the fan base. She doesn't have the overall charisma you need to carry.
Yeah.
And I hate because unfortunately a part of it is the language barrier too, because it's like you look at a story like Bianca Belair, right? She was a college track athlete who from a small town in Tennessee, but then went to a SEC school, ran track, did all this great stuff, was a bodybuilder, did all this stuff. Her husband is currently also a wrestler. He's a combat veteran.
He's about to get a big push too.
So she's that type of story, kind of like when they pushed Bayley. Bayley was somebody that the kids could get behind because she was doing all the hugging and all that type of stuff. But no, the kids fell for it, and that was what you wanted. You know, the same with Sasha Banks. She was the boss. You knew when she walked into a room what you were getting. So Bianca is like that. She has the charisma. When you look at someone like Asuka, how are you relating to her? How is the crowd reacting to her? Because here's exactly what would happen. What would happen to Asuka is the same thing that would happen to Cody Rhodes. And this is why I'm going to say it like this. They win the title. Everything is cool for the first, we'll say, month. Maybe two. But it starts to wane. It'll go here, and then it'll just go down. Because say what you want about Cody. Cody's great at what he does, but Cody doesn't have the type of star power and charisma that Roman Reigns does.
Hell no.
He would not be able to carry the momentum that Roman has had this entire time. It's not too different from the match I'm going to pivot to here now, Austin Theory and John Cena. Similar situation, because John Cena was right. Austin Theory kind of loses either way. And it's simply because if he loses to John Cena, he loses he loses the belt, but then he loses all of his credibility, all the building that they've done. But then if he wins, you beat John Cena, but now you have to, like you said, that following Monday, step out on your own without me and continue carrying this thing on.
Got to live up.
Now, I'm not saying that Austin Theory at some point can't do it, but he's still so young in his push. And he's a great heel. Like he's going to be a really good heel moving forward. Like he's captured the heel part. I remember him as a face because I watched him on NXT. him and Johnny Gargano, Indy Hartwell, and all those. I watched all that, but like he as a heel, he's doing really well. It's gonna be his best bet is staying as a heel. So, how do you stay strong? How do you stay strong after a match with John Cena? Like unless you, and some of the like unless you essentially squash match style him, how are you gonna do it? Hey, shout out to my sister real quick. What's happening, Jen?
What's up, Jen? The thing I'm most worried about with Austin Theory is if he wins, like you say, if he wins this match, he has to sustain momentum. And I don't know how everybody else feels, but I obviously think John Cena is the greatest U.S. champion ever. He brought hella relevance to that belt. He put over hella talent on that belt.
He turned it into that working man's championship.
He did.
And that's the beauty of what he's done. Now the argument can be made like a lot of people will say yes that John Cena is the best U.S. champion we've had. People will make that argument for the Miz as well.
I go with Miz for the Intercontinental.
I can too, but then you know Chris Jericho's in that mix too.
Chris Jericho is in that mix. Chris Jericho did hold that.
I agree when it comes to John Cena.
That they probably booked this match a couple. They probably should have saved this one for SummerSlam instead of WrestleMania. Definitely should have been for SummerSlam. And they could have gave him somebody who's. I mean, same way they're giving Gunther the perfect way. Like if he wins his match, his build up and everything for how long he's had the belt. Has been absolutely worth it. He's getting to the point where he's a household name now. 100%. It would suck if they squash him in this match. But
I'm hoping that's not the case. Like, I really hope they don't do that.
I really like him.
Who, Gunther?
So, yeah.
Or Austin Theory. I fucks with Gunther. Like, and speaking of Gunther, like, we'll talk about that match now because it's him versus Drew McIntyre versus Sheamus. And I can see a situation now where they have Gunther drop the title simply because this is the only title that keeps Sheamus from jumping into the Grand Slam champion conversation now.
Big facts.
So I forgot Sheamus about wins that. His match. Yeah, that. So this is the only title that Sheamus hasn't won. So Sheamus wins his title. All of a sudden, he's a Grand Slam champion, joining The Miz, joining Seth Rollins, you know, joining all these big names of his peers who are currently wrestling. They're still quite a few Grand Slam champions that are still currently wrestling on the main roster, though, he would join. So, Miz is a two-time Grand Slam champion. He's the only two-time, which he'll never let you forget that either. So, let's talk about what, in my opinion, is going to be the worst match on this entire card. Brock Lesnar versus Omos. This match is going to be terrible. I'm sorry.
Yeah, it's going to be
nothing, there's nothing about this match that makes sense.
They would have been better off just like booking like a world's strongest man type of competition. I don't know. This is Omos to me. He's not it to me. I don't care how much people want to put him over because he's giant and things. And long gone are the days where you're just giant and you're something to marvel at in WWE. That is gone. You're 6'10", your 6'10" guys can do amazing things now in the ring other than just be big.
Yeah.
It's going to be terrible. I don't know if Brock Lesnar can just throw him around into Suplex City. And Omos doesn't have a set of moves. I mean, he's
not that we've seen, at least.
And not that we've seen, at least. This is true.
So, I don't know what they're trying to do with this. Like, I really don't. Like, I have no idea what they're trying to do with this whatsoever. But they're now.
I'll tell you the truth. I'd have just rather seen.
Yeah, well, see, they're also building it now to where they're doing like a weigh-in. Like they're doing like a UFC fight. Like they're building it up like that. And I'm like, but why?
Yeah.
Like, explain that part to me. But why? Like, why are you doing it this way? Because it doesn't, it just, I don't know. Everything about this match just seems like trash.
Trash.
Like it's not just as bad. this match is going, and I hate that I'm even about to say this, but this match is going to be worse than Goldberg versus Undertaker at Crown Jewel. And that was the same match where Undertaker was pissed because Goldberg botched so much shit.
Well, Goldberg is horrible at wrestling. All the people say about John Cena, about he only has 5 moves, is definitely true about Goldberg.
On top of that, Goldberg is also a free agent. So
good. Take him to AEW with Sting. They'd enjoy him there.
Yeah, so anyway, I'm done with that match because that match is going to be terrible anyway. But let's get back to this Legends match that's coming up, because you've got Trish Stratus, Lita, and Becky Lynch. By the way, Becky Lynch and Lita are the women's tag team champions currently, facing off against Damage Control, which consists of Bayley, Dakota Kai, and Io Sky or Io Shirai, however you want to look at it. Either way. But that goes back to the conversation we had earlier when we were talking about the women's division, because Trish Stratus and Lita, two of the founding women that helped branch and create and have the women's division set up to the way it is now. So I didn't know what the direction that WWE is going in with having Becky Lynch and Lita being the women's tag champs, because I don't know how long, because the last couple matches I've watched with it, Lita's a step slow. Like, she is. Lita is a step slow, and it's obvious.
Lita's old, bro.
She is. Like, and it's not her fault. It's just the situation of what it is. But I'm like, how do you justify taking the belt off of Becky and Lita and what, giving it back to Damage Control? Like, what do you, how can you do it without making the man look bad?
I don't know, unless they're just going to put her back in the main event push.
Well, at some point, she's got to get back into that picture. I mean, probably shortly. I'm sure. I wouldn't be surprised if for SummerSlam she's got a championship match.
Yeah. I don't know what the plan is here. I don't think beating Becky Lynch, Lita, and Trish does anything to put Damage Control over. And I don't think Becky Lynch, Lita, and Trish winning is going to help put them back over as well. I don't understand the point of this match unless Damage Control loses and then somebody, and then Bayley turns and goes back to solo and returns to the solo championship scene. I don't get it. I just don't.
I'm right there with you. Like, that's the problem, is I don't understand what's happening, because there's I guess that's always how WWE kind of goes. Like, we never understand some of the decisions that are made. I guess that's what makes us, you know, the fans that we are.
I don't think I don't think they understand it. They just roll with it.
Yeah, point taken. So moving on from that match, because that, I mean, we'll see. You got Edge versus Finn Balor in a Hell in a Cell match. This past Monday, you had Edge doing some crazy ass black screen with the candles, call out the demon. So he called out Demon Finn Balor. So it looks like we're going to have essentially the demon versus the devil in a Hell in a Cell match.
We just have the demon.
So we're going to see the Edge doing the brood theme once again, and we're going to see the demon Finn Balor come out, which just means it's going to be that much better of a match. And I've kind of said this for a while. I wonder what your take is on this, but I think it's time for Finn Balor to step away from the Judgment Day. Because I think he has too much star power for this group. Like, now that he's back into the fold as normal, like, I like, now granted, I absolutely do not like Dominic Mysterio. That's just me. But
I agree with this. Especially if Rhea Ripley wins the title.
Yeah.
It seems like they kind of just put Finn Balor there to raise the prominence of everybody else in the group.
Well, because originally it was Edge, so
yeah. And now it's like, okay, Finn Balor obviously can have his own push again, because I remember he did fight Roman Reigns for the title before, whenever Roman Reigns was not in the business of giving John Cena a title match and accepting it. No. So he is Finn Balor's instead, which turned out to be a pretty good match.
100%. It was a great match.
I do think Finn Balor should be in the conversation for either U.S. champion or intercontinental champion, and give him one last push before you bring him all the way up to actual universal
title. Back to where he was before.
Yeah. Which is crazy. You got to raise his stock, because people don't understand. Finn Balor was the man in NXT. I didn't even watch NXT and I knew who Finn Balor was.
Finn Balor, Johnny Gargano, Tommaso Ciampa, like they were the staples when all those guys, when your Roman Reigns and your Seth Rollins and your Dean Ambroses and your Big E's, Kofi, when they all got called up, these guys were still there doing what they do.
Yeah.
I also do like the group, like possibly adding somebody. Now who that is, like there's been lots of different rumors. I think this would be a good place to add somebody like a Karrion Kross, because Karrion Kross needs not a rebranding, but a slightly different push.
He does need a push.
So why not, you know, do his entrance isn't too far off from what the Judgment Day is kind of already doing. So I think he can fit that bill. I'm a big Damian Priest fan, so I do like the Judgment Day. Like I do like the Judgment Day.
I just don't like Dominic Mysterio.
I just don't like Dominic Mysterio. Oh, look. The man of the CEO of the punk ass jet community has tapped in.
Sorry, CJ, we ain't talking about your punk ass jets today.
We're talking about some wrestling. All right, so you've got two tag team fatal four way type matches that haven't been announced yet. We'll see how they go. I guess we'll find out really on Friday what the finals of that'll be. But other than that, I'm still gonna watch it. You'll probably be at my house, hell, for all I know.
I'm going to try to get there, because I know I got it. WrestleMania is what day?
It's the first weekend in April.
The first weekend. Okay, so actually, no, I might be able to get there. Yeah, I should be able to get there, because I was thinking the second week, because the second week I do got a DJ here in Bay.
But you're going to be at the crib for Easter, though. So.
Oh, yeah. Shit, sure. Yeah. You already know this.
Yeah. It goes down.
By the way, for people who are in the chat, I don't like Dominic Mysterio when his dad is done.
Hey, no, by that's fact. I don't know what the hell Dominic gonna do when Ray ain't in this thing no more. Because
that's the only thing keeping him relevant.
Well, they're trying to go back and forth. Like they talked about, Rey Mysterio came out and already said he wouldn't fight his son at WrestleMania, which means they're possibly building that for SummerSlam.
Dominic is going to do something crazy.
He's already doing something crazy. But I also think this, like this fake ass "I've been to jail" type shit is just, oh my god, bro! It's like it's comical.
It's unbearable. It's at this point.
He's getting like that that Santino Marilla treatment.
Yeah,
Santino was really believable in his dumbass antics. Like I can't believe anything about, like I don't know if you caught it on Friday Night SmackDown last week when they were talking about all my friends were driving Mercedes and here I am driving the school BMW and it wasn't even a 3 Series. I was like, if you don't get the fuck out of here with that shit. Like, I was like, bro.
I sat there and I was like, who the hell wrote this promo? I hope it wasn't him, because he sucks. You know what? By the way, since I'm going to be by you for Easter, anybody in the chat, y'all that's going to be there or is not going to be there, y'all got any games that y'all suggest we play on Easter for a family-like kind of party? Let us know. We're open to any kind of game besides getting wet. That's a no.
Yeah, no, I ain't doing that. But that's what she said. you did it. So I did get my hands on a cornhole board. So we definitely getting the cornhole in. Just so you're welcome.
Thank you. I'm gonna kick your ass, according to you.
Get the fuck out of here.
Kick your ass accordingly, too.
Listen, you're going to get this smoke faster than an Amazon Prime next day shipping package while you're playing.
Shut up. All right.
On the NCAA tournament, simply because we forgot, we didn't cover one particular thing that I know we wanted to cover. And it was a question that you posed to me. So now I'm going to flip it and pose it back to you. And it is the number ones or the field. Now, mind you, your number ones are currently, as it stands, Alabama and Houston.
Yep.
That's the only number ones left. So
against 14 other teams.
So it's kind of really 14 on two. So how do you know, what's your take on it?
I still feel pretty good about going with the number ones. I don't think Furman or Princeton scares me enough.
Well, Furman's gone. San Diego State beat them.
San Diego State. I think San Diego State is really good. But they just they're missing something. Like, they kind of remind me of the Kawhi Leonard San Diego State team. And for those of you, I do like my Spurs too. And I was a fan of Kawhi Leonard because people were like, you didn't know nothing about Kawhi. Yes, I did. I watched San Diego State. I watched the tournament. I thought Kawhi Leonard was amazing. They're missing something. And I haven't figured out what it is yet. It's nothing to do with coaching. It's just the way they play. Something seems off. And I feel like if they get hot, they could beat anybody. But I feel like if they go cold, they can't stop anybody. That's what it is.
Both number ones are in action on Friday, so that'll give you that's something to do on that day.
I'm taking the number ones. I don't see both of them being upset, at least before the Final Four.
I mean, at this point, is it really an upset? Here's how I guess it will still be an upset. Hypothetically speaking, let's say that Alabama beats San Diego State and Princeton beats Creighton. So now you're talking about a 15-1 matchup in the Elite Eight, which I don't know. Was the last time we saw something like that, was that when George Mason made their run? Because George Mason was a double digit. Were they at 10?
Who was it last year? Somebody last year
Providence.
Was it Providence?
I think it was Providence.
Yeah, it might be Providence. Somebody last year made a crazy run. How about the VCU with their run as well? Yeah. I mean, if Princeton was to somehow win and upset Alabama, I don't know what to say.
So I saw this TikTok. And it was like it said Princeton after they beat Missouri, and they showed the campus being quiet as hell. No partying, no celebrating, no nothing. And I'm like, bro, it's an Ivy League school, bro. I'm sure they party, but they don't party like how they don't party how, like, if Missouri would have won and Missouri was a 15 beating a 7, Missouri would have been turned up.
Yeah. I'm sticking with the number ones. I'm definitely going to stick with the number ones because I do believe in Alabama and I do believe in Houston. I believe one of them is going to be in the championship game.
Okay, so I'm with you. I mean, it's really easy to pick the field because of the amount of upsets. And mind you, now U of H has played some very, we'll say, nail biting type of games. Well, except against Auburn, they beat the brakes off of Auburn.
Yeah,
But that game against Northern was 52-63. It was fairly close. Like, it was closer than you think. Don't let the final score fool you. Like, U of H looked a little rough in the first half. Now they came to ball and beat the brakes off of Charles Barkley's Auburn Tigers. But I think they really do. Enough. But they have a really good matchup against this Miami team, because Miami came out and beat Drake in the first round, and they beat a number 4 Indiana team by almost 20.
Yeah, they beat the break.
So they've got a lot of momentum coming into this game, so it's going to be interesting. But a matchup that hasn't been talked about a lot that I think more people hopefully are paying attention to is ironic. Hold on.
Whoa, CJ.
CJ was just talking about it. So So because I was just about to talk about this matchup between Xavier and Texas, because a lot of people feel like Texas is being disrespected because people aren't talking about the Longhorns as much as they're talking about the Tennessees, the Alabamas, University of Houston's and everything else. And it's like Texas has kind of slipped under the, you know, as kind of like, and Xavier for that matter, as like the forgotten about teams. So he also said Alabama going to the Final Four. I mean,
damn.
Look, if Alabama lose to Princeton, I'm crying because the amount of memes is going to be out there. Ivy League versus country, boy, I can just tell you there's going to be some memes out there. So I hope it don't happen, but it will be some memes out there. Let's pivot into something that you and I love talking about. Let's talk about fantasy sports.
Yep.
Specifically because we are in the NBA season, we will talk about fantasy basketball. I don't know if you saw it or not, but I beat your ass last week.
Okay. Wait a minute. That's not the way we start this shit off. Okay. That's not how it's done. That is not how it's done. Okay. Wait a minute.
100% how I'm starting it off.
I suggested this, and I really have nothing major to say about fantasy, about fantasy in any kind of way, just because this year, unless you have a top 10 player, it's been very up and down. Like you've had, like just the other day, if you had Austin Reeves, he blew up. You had Dylan Brooks a couple of weeks ago. Yeah. It's just been boom, boom.
That's how fantasy basketball is. Fantasy basketball, like you have your stars, you have your top 25, and then you got a bunch of other guys. Like your guys from 26 to 100 are like this for the rest of the season. Like they just are. But it all just, again, comes down to who you drafted and how you drafted. So I'm glad we brought this up into the fold because I wanted to give the viewers kind of a peek behind the curtain a little bit.
Okay. So
when you get, well, I know you're on your phone, so I'll pull your roster for you so you don't mess up your camera. So for my NBA fans out there, y'all can listen to this roster, y'all can critique it how you see fit, but say what you want about me and my team, but I'm 19-2 on the season, so you can't tell me shit. Or like Kanye West said, you can't tell me nothing. Because I don't lose very often. But I drafted Kevin Porter Jr. from the Houston Rockets. I drafted Tyler Hero. I grabbed Tyus Jones because, of course, we know Ja Morant was out. Dumbass millionaire. He was out for a little bit doing whatever it is he was doing.
Dumbass millionaire. Fishing.
I drafted.